art, comedy, pop culture, and much more. You're listening to ACPN.
Okay, here we go. Something. We get to hijack something, your brain.
Okay, here we go. Hey, everybody. I'm James N.
Podcast Rob.
And Big Matt.
And we are on countdown for the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast. Not as long as the fireworks I set off.
That's very good.
Yeah. Indoors.
I forgot how long that was. Yeah, this episode marks single digits remaining.
Oh, it's so weird.
This is 9 left.
So strange.
But they're going to be 9 amazing ones.
The best ones.
The best 9.
I know the topics for the next 9, so.
Maybe the best 4 out of 9. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there's
2 out of 10.
There's definitely going to be a recap. But what are we doing today, James?
Well, we are going into the world of comic books, the funny books, the silly laugh-a-minutes that you can get at your local newsstand, your little 23-page chuckle huts. And we are going to be discussing our favorite issues of comics. I won't lie, I was vague in some vicinities here, but favorite issues of comics, the things that moved us in the artistic form. It's real hard to narrow this shit down.
It really is. Now, can we go with story arc, not just singular comic?
Yeah, okay. That saves me some trouble. Because, like, trying to pick, like, well, issue 3 of this storyline was D-D-D, but issue 4 had the action. Or if it's, like, a Bendis story, there were 6 issues of garbage that I didn't understand, and then 1 issue where Scarlet Witch saved everyone. Sorry.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't really have a hard time doing this. Pretty easy for me.
Well, then why don't you start us off, Rob, if it's so easy?
All right.
Well done, Matt.
Fair enough. So the first one I'm going to start off with is actually the one that I just changed before we started recording. Because social media had reminded me of a post I made weeks ago. My first issue, and these are in no order of best to worst to best, whatever, blah, blah, blah. My first issue is issue 13 of Sandman, which was Doll's House number 5, Men of Good Fortune, which is the story of Hob Gadling. It was kind of a standalone story in the greater Doll's House arc. Basically, you see Morpheus and his sister Death way back in like the Black Plague times. And they're dressed as nobles and they're talking about interacting with humans, and they walk into an inn and they're sitting there listening to people talking. And this guy Hob Gadling is talking about how death is dying is a Rube's game and he doesn't believe in it. So he's just not going to die because he doesn't believe in death.
Right.
It's for suckers. And Death and Dream kind of stare at each other and they're like, are you game? So Death she never takes him. And Dream goes over and says, so did you say you're not going to die? So I'll make a bet with you. We'll come back here every 100 years and we'll catch up to see how you're doing. And he's like, well, you're on. And all of his friends fucking make fun of him. And the whole issue is just every 100 years, they get back together in this tavern. And there are 100-year arcs where he's where Hobbs doing amazing, and he's got millions of gold coins from trader ships. And then the next 100 years, he's like been eating rats in the alleys because he got so destitute. Back and forth, back and forth, and it was just a really great issue for that series. And I was really it's one that stuck with me to the point where. A friend of mine on Blue Sky was asking for 20 comic characters over 20 days, post one a day. And that was one of the ones that I posted because I thought the character of Hob Gadling was really cool.
It is a great issue. And I think the Hob Gadling story is one of my favorites of the sort of individual Sandman stories. There's so many great individual issues of Sandman that... It's a good one. I mean, I agree with you wholly. It's one of the best solo single stories. It gets revisited later, but
sure.
Matt, why don't you go with yours?
Okay, I'm just gonna go with the series from Frank Miller, Daredevil: Born Again. Just one of my favorite overall stories. I mean, you had everything from Matt Murdock being basically driven insane. What's her name? Secretary Lady.
Yes.
Right. Not her.
She's strung out on heroin for this. It just like this was just such a complete story though.
Karen.
Yes, thank you. And this was just one I remember reading. I think this was early 90s. So this came out in 86. I remember reading it in the early 90s. And it was one of the things that just kind of brought me into comics because the story was so complete. And Frank Miller was just, at that point, amazing. I'm not saying he's not now. You can argue a couple ways on Frank Miller in his later years. But so, yeah, that was just one that really kind of got me into comics.
I get it. I have one problem with Born Again, because I agree it is one of the greatest Daredevil stories of all time. My problem is the last maybe two issues. It might be just one, but the fact that it's this amazing Kingpin tears down Daredevil story and Daredevil rises up to but then the last two issues are Captain America and Nuke.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not reading a Captain America book.
Fair. I mean, fair, but even if that landing wasn't necessarily stuck, everything else worked.
Thoroughly.
Yes.
Because it's 100% like the story. It is the story that people have replicated in Daredevil every time.
Yep. And I think we're going to get the next series being called Born Again on Disney Plus.
Yep.
I have high hopes. I don't want them crushed. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you. And even, you know, much like Daredevil Comics, you know, they've replicated Born Again multiple times. Now they're replicating that as a story because Netflix did it already. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, kind of.
That's okay. All right. Well, I am going to jump back to what Rob said. The reason I went for you, I pushed off to you, Matt, was because I needed to find the issue number. And that issue is Sandman number 24. It is part of Season of Mists. And it is where Lucifer has abdicated his throne. And he has given the key to Morpheus. And it's sort of Morpheus's decision as to what he should do with hell. You get so much like good chuck full of Neil Gaiman crap in there. You get a journey through hell. You get to see all these demons. You get more Sandman lore as he calls on all of his brothers and sisters. So you see what their worlds look like a little differently. And it's sort of the demons sitting there like fighting over what they're going to do about hell. Are we going to let this man, this thing, this entity deal with it all the while? Dream is just sort of stuck in himself trying to figure it out. It's just one of my favorite single issues and what is my favorite Sandman trade Season of Mists. And yeah, I think it's not the one that is a specific story. It is a part of a whole, but really feeds a lot of what's to come in that story.
So yeah. It was a good story. It really was. The whole Lucifer basically just giving up and giving Morpheus the key to hell.
Yeah.
Being like, here, it's yours now.
And then making an awesome, you know, TV show about his exploits solving crime.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was either going to be this issue or the serial killer convention.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, the serial convention, because it's so good.
Yeah.
The reveal is so good. Rob, back to you.
So for my next one, I am going with... It was a one-shot book that came out of a series that I had started collecting in my youth. And this one-shot affected me so much that I ended up getting a tattoo of it. It was the first issue published by Sirius Comics. This is Drama. It's a Cry for Dawn story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-shot. It's very dreamlike in its progression of story. But all the previous Cry for Dawn comics to this point were like little horror anthologies, kind of like how the VHS movie was. We're going to tell three or four different horror stories. And she was kind of the mascot. This mm-hmm. was the first one where she was an actual character. And the entire artwork in the book was painted, whereas everything before that was just black and white line work. So the impact and the story that this had on me at that time was very profound. So I did indeed end up getting the comedy tragedy masks, the chain, and the rose thorns as a tattoo. But it is a pretty amazing book. And if you can get your hands on it, even if you're unfamiliar with other Cry for Dawn stuff, it is definitely worth a read. If only for the visual impact, but it won't only be for the visual impact because the story is pretty intense too.
Yeah. I mean, there are, I guess, divisive opinions of Linsner, but when he's on, he was on.
100%.
1,000%.
He is not the squeakiest clean of individuals, correct?
Yeah, but his artwork dawns the character, and from what I remember, and I know I read those trades so long ago, I'm sure it's one of the stories that's in my head, because there's only one or two that sort of rang true.
Can I tell a funny Linsner story real quick?
Oh, please.
So this was back when I used to collect comics, and we used to go to the, I think it was called the Great Eastern Comic Convention,
mm-hmm.
which was at the Penta Hotel, which used to be the Hotel Pennsylvania, right across from Grand Central Station. It was one of my few and only forays into New York City. We used to take the train, cross the street, and we were in a building, cross the street, go home. That was it. But one year, I went and I had this hand puppet. It was like this shaggy Mopkin kind of hand puppet, because I was in my early 20s and I was kind of an asshole. And that's what you do. You go to a convention with your hand puppet. And some of the comic book artists were really cool. Like, they were talking to the puppet. They were doing sketches of them. The puppet was reacting to them. And I got fairly decent at carrying on a conversation with somebody while the puppet was doing something different. So we roll up on a table, and there's Joseph Linsner, and he's got all of his big portfolio books out. And I'm talking to Linsner about how big of a fan I am. And my puppet is flipping through his portfolio books, looking at the artwork, while I'm just dead staring at Linsner talking to him. And he's going, thank you very, very much. And he's like, back and forth between me and the puppet and me and the puppet. And finally he looks at the puppet and goes, can you stop? And closes all of his portfolio books and puts them under the table because he was so unnerved because my puppet was doing its own thing. Fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Having met the man, that tracks.
Yeah.
Have you met the puppet?
I've not met the puppet. Matt, you're up.
Okay, I'm going to go with another run here. And this is by a man we all know, Garth Ennis. in 2004, yep. he did a run, I believe, 60 issues of Punisher under the Max title.
Yes.
Now, this was like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, everything was extreme. Everything, you know, Mountain Dew flowing over waterfalls and shit like that. Limp Bizkit playing on the radio. And he did, this was like the dark, I don't know how you can have a gritty Punisher, but, you know, this was, and there were, this run had no superpowers, no yeah. superheroes, supervillains. It was just Frank. But this was non-canonical. So I realized later. So this one didn't fit into any of the others. But, like, he was the only one who survived a massacre in Vietnam, and he's promised himself basically to the devil, kind of. That first issue, it's not quite clear. And then he lives as the Punisher. And he's just... And it is over the top, and it is extreme, but it's really good reading. Highly recommend. If you've never read the Punisher Max, Garth Ennis Unleashed is always fun. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple writers who, when they're let free to roam and just sort of given carte blanche to play, they do their best work. Garth Ennis is one of them. Holy.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I almost had Preacher on here, and I decided against it. I had other stuff I wanted to put up.
All right, James?
Yes, I am. Here's one of my other ones where I had an issue and not a storyline. I almost put Onslaught as a concept from X-Men, but everybody hates Onslaught, but I love Onslaught. And having watched X-Men 97, I am excited that that might come. That said, I went with one specific issue of Uncanny X-Men. It is Uncanny X-Men number 390. It is the death of Colossus.
Ooh, okay.
Probably the first comic I remember reading that emotionally, like, gut punched me. Short version is, let me see, what year is this? Good God, I just threw it up on my screen so I can remember all the deets. It is 2014. Wow, it was really that late? I thought it was much earlier. Anyway, 2014. That's wrong. That is so wrong. It's not 2014. That must be from a trade paperback. Doesn't matter. Anyway, the legacy virus, the virus that is killing mutants, has been running rampant through Marvel Universe for a couple years. And Colossus is trying to find his place. He's failed on one team. He's failed on another. His sister, Ilyana, has died. He's really, and she died, I believe she died from legacy virus at this point. She ends up coming back. So all of the X-Men are in this moment of respite and this moment of downtime. All the while, they're sort of watching the X-Men wither away. It's very allegorical to, you know, the AIDS epidemic. And Colossus locks himself into Beast's lab and sacrifices himself. He had to inject the legacy virus into him. It had cure had to live in someone before it could sort of spread and be released. Comic book bullshit, but yeah. So he locks himself into Beast's lab. All of them are trying to, like, beat down on the door. We'll find a way. We'll figure out a way where the X-Men, God damn it. And he just injects himself in the heart. And he is dead for about 15 years in comics. And then he is brought back unceremoniously by Joss Whedon, which is horrible. But in the world of X-Men comics, it was the one death that I went, oh, this means something. Oh, this hurts. I love Colossus. He's just a pure artist. But yeah, X-Men 390.
2001 that came out.
Thank you. I knew 2014 was wrong. We pass the buck to Rob.
Yeah, and that's kind of a deep story too, because he's like, I mean, not that he's the only one, but he's kind of like the impervious one.
Yes.
So that he's the one that makes that sacrifice was kind of all the more hard-hitting about it.
Yeah. And the scene where they're just like, oh, they're at the door. And anyway.
All right. I am going to go over to an independent series. This was a first, a series from First Comics. And I started collecting it like 2/3 of the way through its run. And in all of my time in collecting comics, this was the only title that I went like tooth and nail back and forth conventions and stuff, and ended up getting every single issue of this run before I ended up getting out of comics. It's American Flag number one by Howard Chaykin. The story arc was called Hard Times, but it is the reveal that the new Ranger is a former porn star named who is named Mark Thrust, sexist Ranger.
Mark Thrust.
But the whole American Flag story, like, it takes place in 2046. The countries are now all owned by corporations. So the U.S. is called the Plex, and their police are the Plexus Rangers. But the way they do the lettering for the sound effects and like the names and stuff and just the layout of the panels was so mind-blowing to me. Because you're reading these early pages, and every now and then there's like a little box that says, like, you know, Go Gang's 34 minutes. And a couple boxes later, it says Go Gang's 27 minutes. And you start to realize it's a countdown. And every Friday night, these motorcycle gangs would watch this TV show that they end up finding had subliminals in it. That would get them all fucking ramped up. And they'd all get on their motorcycles and they'd wreak havoc at all of the malls and do all these riots. So the police would go there and shut them down. But they start talking about things like their Nachtmacher grenades, which were basically just blackout grenades, and some Nambutal bullets that you hit, boom! And it was just, like, the wording and the names and the technology and the way it was all laid out was, like, it was pulp, but it was so engaging that you couldn't put it down. But that is probably one of my favorite overall series.
Yeah, you've touted that series quite a bit over the years. I still have not read it. I must.
There's a ton of graphic novels out there too now that just collect all the different story series. But it's good stuff.
Very, very good, Matt.
This one I was having a little bit of an issue trying to decide on. So I was always a huge fan of Venom. And, you know, I wanted to have every appearance of Venom. And he was just one of my favorite kind of anti-heroes, kind of a good guy at one, some point, kind of not. But there was just something really fun about him to me. And when I was trying to think of which ones I wanted to go with which issue I wanted to go with for this, of course, Secret Wars number 8 is a good one to go with. Amazing Spider-Man 252 is a good one to go with. I'm going with issue 298. So that was the first appearance of Eddie Brock.
Ah, okay.
In the last few pages, as he's sitting there looking over the pictures of Spider-Man with jealousy, he's, you know, losing his job. He you know, Peter Parker's always out scooping him. Yeah, get that rage going. But the reason I picked this one is not just because of that, but this is also the first Todd McFarlane Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things right there, you know, Todd McFarlane's amazing. Story was great. First Eddie Brock, 298, 299, 300, of course, is the first Venom. So that whole thing right there, but 298 is just one of my favorites because of Todd McFarlane taking over.
It is a very famous time in the world of the Spidey.
Mm-hmm.
I actually also have a Spider-Man issue. Now, I do
as well coming up.
Excellent.
Now, I wasn't a Spider-Man fan through the, you know, the McFarlane years. Like, I didn't get to Spidey till much later when J. Michael Straczynski jumped on, because he is one of my favorite writers. Shock of all shocks. He did a pretty well-received run of Spider-Man in the early 2000s. But there was one character and one issue that when I read it, like, I've been reading comics for a very long time. When I read this and I went, how come no one's ever put that together? Huh. Well, shit. It is issue technically 506. The storyline is the Book of Ezekiel, I believe. And so short version is there is a creature that's going and killing all of the animal monsters, you know, or stop, you know, defeating them in vicious, brutal ways. Rhino, the vulture, etc. And this guy, Ezekiel, who has powers remarkably close to Peter, kind of stops him and goes, you know, he's coming for you, right? And Peter's like, what? And Ezekiel goes, haven't you ever noticed the way this universe segments itself? The people with technology go after Iron Man. The mutants go after the X-Men. The interstellar monsters go after the Fantastic Four. This is a man going after animals. And you are the spider totem. And I was like, oh, shit. How come no one's ever actually brought that together? Huh. Like, in my brain, I understood that's how comics work. But in as far as, like, the meta of characters recognizing that their stories are interwoven in such a way felt so very Joe Michael Straczynski and so very cool. The entire series is excellent from top to bottom. John Romita artwork, and cannot speak more highly of them. And then it goes through Civil War, which is iffy, and then one last day, which is fucking trash fire. But the story of Ezekiel is a high point in the JMS run, and issue 506 is baller.
Now, I was not a huge Spider-Man person. I did collect a bunch of the Todd McFarlane ones once he started doing them, because, like, right around that time, comics were kind of off the chain anyway. I think kind of starting with, like, New Mutants 100 was one of the first books that I can remember that was like, hey, here's the issue, and then here's the gold foil variant, and here's the silver foil variant, and here's the, and like all these other different things. And I remember issue one of the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man was the same way. They had the regular one in the poly bag, then they had the silver and the gold and everything else, blah, 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 blah. But one of my favorite Spider-Man stories that I did read, and it also kind of leans into this whole totemic Spider-Man thing, Amazing Spider-Man 294, Kraven's Last Hunt, which is the issue where Kraven offs himself.
Yep.
And that was, like, I almost don't even know how to describe it, because as you're reading through that six-issue story, first you're getting through the fact that what we think happens is he kills Spider-Man and buries him. And then he eats a bunch of spiders and takes over the Spider-Man persona. And then we find out, oh, he didn't really kill him. He just shot him with a trank dart that kept him unconscious for 2 weeks. But once it's all said and done, like, he gets to the point where, like, cool, I did the thing I set out to do. This was the guy who's been embarrassing me at every turn, and I became him. I'm good. Bang. And then eats a rifle. And you're just like, what the fuck? And I swear to you, if this is not the story that they do in the Kraven movie, there is no point making this Kraven movie.
I'm going to tell you right now, it's probably not the story they're doing in the Kraven movie.
I'm sure it's not the story they're doing. But there's no point to a Kraven movie unless it's this story. Because, in my opinion, he was kind of a borderline B-list character until this story came around. But that is my number four.
Okay. I think I'd agree with that. That was the story that put sort of Kraven on the map for otherwise just being sort of a cornball 1960s villain. Yeah.
What? He wears fur with an open chest hair thing going on? What are you talking about?
Sir, what you got?
Okay. This one, I wasn't sure if I was going to do this one first or last. So I'm going to do it fourth. That sounds about right. EC Comics, Haunt of Fear, number 17. 1953, Graham Ingalls. The cover is three zombies, and then you have your three windows featuring the witch, the vault keeper, and the crypt keeper. So the reason this one is so special is because this was one of the ones that was so bad that it caused public outrage. So this is before the rating stamp on comic books. This is the book that caused that. So this one was like held up in front of Congress at one point where they're talking about how this is warping our kids' minds and all this stuff. And I've kind of recently got into collecting EC comics, but this is one I had to have. So it's just EC comics are great. The Crypt Keeper, all the horror comics. The covers are amazing. They're dark as hell. And they're surprisingly graphic for the early 50s. And I love EC Comics, but this one, Haunt of Fear 17, takes a special place in my heart because just the controversy it caused.
I have a couple of those big sort of showcase DC books that captures a lot of the old Silver Age stuff, but my favorite ones are all of the horror books from then. And I know it's not the ECs where there was a little bit of gore and there was a little bit of violence and there was a little bit. But every time I get a chance to read one of those, I love reading myself some old horror comics.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When we used to go to Florida, when me and my parents used to go to Florida, we used to drive down. So on the trip down, it was always like stopping at Stuckey's on the way down for like, you know, the bathroom break, food, whatever. And they always had the comic book spinner racks inside, but it was always either Archie comics or, yeah, those old school fucking horror comics.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That was good stuff.
So I know they reprinted a lot of them in the 70s, the originals, and then they've been releasing volumes. But that's awesome. Also, you didn't stop at South of the Border?
Oh, of course we did.
Okay.
Duh.
Patton.
Pedro would do unconscionable things to you if you didn't stop at South of the Border.
Sometimes if you did.
Well, that's another podcast. That's
fair. I'm going with not, this is not about the story because the whole comic is probably one of my favorite comic stories of all time. I am specifically going with Lock and Key, Keys to the Kingdom. If you're not aware, Lock and Key is done by Joe Hill. And there's been a wonderful Netflix show that they did pretty damn well on. It is about this family that moves into a house, and the house has keys, and the keys do different things, and there's people trying to get the keys, and that. It is wonderful. It is a great story, top to bottom. Highly recommend it. Cannot recommend it enough. So, the first issue of the second act, which is called Lock and Key, Keys to the Kingdom, has a special dedication right at the front. It says, to Bill Watterson of Calvin and Hobbes fame. And what's amazing about this story is half the story is done entirely in Calvin and Hobbes art style for like what is ultimately a horror story. It is a Lovecraftian-ish sort of story. It's all done in Watterson style. There's sort of the darkness of what's going on happening behind the three-panel frame. But in the three panels, they're set up like Calvin and Hobbes comics with a similar sort of small eye thing. And this is very specifically with one character who is the little kid who loves, you know, Calvin and Hobbes. But then when we go and we look at the other character perspective, it's still in that same three panel structure, although it's, you know, deer getting their throat ripped out by wolves, but then back to Bodhi, he's a bird now. And is it in his imagination or is it really happening? You don't know. It was just such a tonal shift and it's done with such love and care for the source. Can't think it's wonderful enough. It is Lock and Key across the board. Recommended.
And Joe Hill's great too, by the way.
Oh, he's love so his good. Books.
I can almost say that he sticks the landing more often than his father does on some of his books.
By miles.
Yes.
Heart-Shaped Box and Nosferatu are both.
Nosferatu are great.
We will gush later.
Fireman was good too.
I enjoyed The Fireman not as much as I enjoyed Heart-Shaped Box and Nosferatu. But
and short story collections. Oh, sorry.
It was going to say, it was friend of the show, Dawn, who introduced me to Joe Hill, who said, get on reading him now. And I did.
Good stuff. Rob.
All right, my last one before my honorable mention is yet again going back to First Comics It was from the Dreadstar run. It was issue 56. It was a standalone story. Part of Dreadstar's little coterie was a cat person named Eddie, spelled O-E-D-I, human body, cat head, cat kind of paws. But it was an entire parody issue of the original 1989 Batman. So the villain was very clown Joker looking. Eddie's running around in this superhero suit calling himself, "I'm Catman." And it was funny enough on its own. The art was done by Angel Medina and the story was done by Peter David. So once again, we're back at the comic book convention up in New York City, and we're waiting in line for Peter David to get books signed. And everybody had issues of Hulk because he was writing at the time, and he's signing issues of Hulk. And I go up there and I hand him this one, and he started to sign his name and then looked at the actual issue that he was signing and kind of sat back and he looked up at me and he goes, "This is the book you bring me?" I go, "Dude, this book was hilarious." He goes, "You're the only person who's ever read this book," because he knew it was an independent comic book company at the time, but it was just so good. And like, we had like a 10-minute conversation about the book while all these other people are sitting there holding their Hulk comics behind me. But he was so like enthralled that somebody brought him a book that he wrote that was just so far off the beaten path and off the radar.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That kind of made his day. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Podcast Rob, making people smile.
Whether it's with puppets or old books.
Yeah.
I've been going back and forth trying to figure out what I wanted my last one to be. Because I've got like three here for honorable mentions in my last one. I'm going to go with, and I read this as a graphic collection. So, an omnibus collection. Judge Dredd, The Apocalypse War with Block Mania. So this is just like early Dredd, and it's amazing. And the whole Block Mania, the Block Wars that start off and lead to the Apocalypse War, is started by some kid dropping his ice cream cone out of the window of his block and hitting someone from another block. The blocks were the towers. Mm-hmm. And that just kicked it off. It was a gang war between it became Block Mania, which was the wars between them. And that led to ever expanding fighting. Then we had the Russians jump in. We sent nukes over there. They sent nukes over here. Judge Dredd went to Russia. I mean, it was just, it's an incredible story. If you like if you like Dredd, you need to read that. Even if you don't like Dredd, I recommend going back and reading the Apocalypse War with Block Mania. I get excited when I talk about that one.
It's exuding off of you.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Highly recommend. Good stuff.
I never read any Judge Dredd.
Like, why not?
It's one that's sort of skimmed off my brain. It's just I've also never read any of the Aliens versus Predator comics that everybody tells me are good. Ooh. See?
Mm. They were good.
Yeah, see? I know. I have misses. And here's one that I think you guys have probably missed. And if you have not, I'm proud of you and we need to talk further. Have either of you ever read Astro City?
Okay. I missed that one.
Oh, it is easily my favorite non-traditional character superhero book ever. It's by Kurt Busiek. Who did Kingdom Come, made a bunch of great stuff. So the bit of Astro City is that when you get into the city, it's a world full of superheroes. There's a Superman-ish guy. There's an Amazon chick. There's a dark guy over there. But it's all within the confines of this very beautiful metropolis-ish city. And it's really about the city. Any issue or any story is an individual tale or a short arc about one hero and a couple people who live there. Or, you know, a guy who's moving out of town, but how could he leave the bright lights of Astro City? But there is one issue in particular, and I was surprised when I was going and making my list here. I was like, holy shit, it was nominated for an Eisner, and I had no idea when it came out. It is Astro City number one half. It was, I believe, when they were relaunching the book after it had its first initial run. The story is called A Nearness of You. Hold on to your tissues. It gets dark. It's the story of a guy who he has just sort of like memories of this woman. And like he's in love with her. He's never met her. He's never seen her. But like she's there, corner of his eye, and she's not there. He has a memory of them dancing. That's it. And then all of a sudden, one of the heroes of Astro City, a man by the name of the Hanged Man, shows up and explains why he's having those visions. And it's because a world comic book traditional cataclysmic event occurred, like an Age of Apocalypse or a, you know, all that shit that happens in DC, where the world changed because of a big supernatural mabob. And one of the changes between the last version of this world and this version is that she doesn't exist anymore. And the Hanged Man, he apologizes and says that, you know, she sacrificed herself for the greater good and but he'll take those memories if he wants them. And it's just this guy's inner struggle with these fleeting glimpses of a life he lived when he was his most happiest versus living this life where he's terrorized by it and always realizing he's never going to be able to have it. It's just a fucking tearjerker. It's phenomenal. And Kurt Busiek does that in such a great way where he tells these human stories through heroes in Astro City. That is, bar none, I think, one of the most hidden gems of hidden gem comic books ever.
I'm just looking at one page from this, and it's fucking rough.
Yeah. There are other ones that are fun, I swear.
It looks like it's after he explained everything to this guy, and he tells the Hanged Man that he doesn't want to forget. And the Hanged Man says, you won't remember this visit, but your sense of understanding will remain. But now I have to visit others tonight. And he kind of stops him and goes, wait, what do most other people choose? Do they choose to forget? Or, and there's a pause, and he just goes, no one forgets. No one. Good night. Sleep well. And then leaves. And you're just like, oh.
Jesus.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, Rob, what do you got?
So I narrowed down to one honorable mention because I literally could have had like five or six honorable mentions.
Easily.
Judge Dredd was awesome. I could have put Martial Law on there, which was a great and fun and gory-ass comic to read. But I went with the overall graphic novel of The Watchmen because... it was very impactful. I read it when I had started getting into comics. I'm still an apologist for the movie. I understand the creative changes that were made out of necessity, but I will still die on the hill that Zack Snyder can make an amazing movie when he is given very strict guidelines to follow, when he is allowed to do amongst himself. We get Man of Steel and Sucker Punch. So,
hey, Army of the Dead wasn't bad.
I mean, we already recorded that episode. I have no further.
Dawn of the Dead is one of my favorite zombie movies.
No further statements on Army.
Legit, my favorite zombie movies.
Hey, I was in Army.
And you're biased anyway. Exactly.
I know. I got to be a zombie.
I was going to say, are you Tig Notaro?
I was flying the helicopter. No, I'm Dave Bautista. Stage name.
Very good. That joke would not go over my head. I would catch it.
So, you know, honorable mentions. I was having a real hard time, you know, weaning those down. I will just say real quick, Preacher, The Boys, both great runs.
Excellent.
Also the Dark Tower comics, you know, just addendums adding on to the Dark Tower stories. But I really liked Batman, the Nightfall series with Bane and the breaking of the bat with, up to, you know, Nightfall with issue 11 with him, Bane, breaking him over his knee on the cover. That's my honorable mention. One, I still have a copy of that today, to this day. I think I have the entire run of Nightfall, actually, still. You know, they're not worth much, but they were great when I was, you know, in my early teens. That was cool.
Yeah.
Bane was cool.
You read my comics. I was born in them.
He was a well-thought-out, intelligent meathead. I respect that.
And then they put him in the Batman Robin movie, and you're like, that's not Bane. That's a dude in a pillow suit.
No, we don't talk about that movie.
My one honorable mention is also a Joe Michael Straczynski comic. The reason it will sadly never make my tops list is because the book has like 12 great issues, and then there was big legal battles between JMS and Image, and it just sort of fell into torpor, and then like it took like four years for the book to come out, and the second arc, the artist left, and it's just garbage art for the second part of it. It's Rising Stars. It was like my book when it came out. Short version, a meteor hits the Earth, and every baby in utero at that point gets superpowers. So there was a finite number of children with powers, and somebody's starting to kill them. Such a good hook. But there is one particular issue where there's some of the heroes are going to try and find out who's killing us. And there's one person who talks to the dead. And while you're reading the comic, occasionally you look and like he's just kind of staring off to the side. And you recognize he's probably talking to the dead. And then in the last page, it's done in a way I've never seen before. The page is just white. And he's sitting in this chair alone. But if you take the page and you hold it up to the light, the ghosts that have been talking to him this whole time and what they're saying are in reverse on the other page. So they're sort of ghastly, translucent in this one page, and you see what he's been dealing with, that he has these like eight ghosts who are all just like, talk about me, talk about me.
That's cool.
That's very cool. Yeah.
It's such a great like one page gimmick. There's a couple other ones I could have thrown out there. Unwritten has a choose your own adventure issue. Yeah, I'll just go with those two.
Sounds good.
All right.
Now, we know there are a lot of other comics that people might like that are out there. James, where can people let us know what comics they like to read?
Well, what's interesting is they can go to somethingcast.com, where we keep all of the links and the doodads and the whatchamacallits for all of your SomethingCast needs. If you want to talk to us on Blue Sky, go to somethingcast.com. You want to see what's on our Insta? Somethingcast.com. And you can get weekly blogs as well as, you know, a podcast or two every week. SomethingCast.com. So I never get to do that.
Say that name again. Where we're going to...
SomethingCast.com. It's .com.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, is there anything else you want to throw out there?
Eight to go.
Oh, God. Shit.
Eight amazing episodes to go.
Eight fairly okay episodes to go.
Mildly intriguing.
Yes.
Eight calling it in episodes to go. Gentlemen, thank you one and all for... I got to read. I'm going to go read some comics.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm on eBay right now looking at the, like Silver Age comics. And I'm like, I can't. No. I shouldn't.
No. All right. Anyway, I'm James Haddon.
I'm Podcast Rob.
I'm Big Matt.
Read some comics. See ya.
Later.
Something.
Okay, here we go.
I am the law.